Thank you so much to Emily Burns and the Terra Foundation for having me. The Société de Géographie archives at the Bibliothèque Nationale de France contain a three-volume set of albums made on the occasion of Buffalo Bill's Wild West's presence in Paris for the 1889 Exposition Universelle. Containing 148 albumin prints, 113 of which feature the native members of the troop or their encampment, these luxury books primarily showcase the indigenous performers in a series of frontal and then profile views. These remarkable photographs register a range of emotions and modes of self-presentation from the exchanges that occurred during the making of the pictures. From the more dapper pride and self-possession of Kill's enemy, who lifts his head and right arm upward, with blanket slung over his left side in the profile view, to the more solemn, withdrawn, nearly vacant expression of Featherman in his frontal image. Featherman appears in two following pictures. The first, a profile view, in which he wears the same simple shirt, and the second, a full-length portrait that captures him standing in more of his show costume before a studio backdrop. Kill's Enemy and Featherman were just two of the roughly 100 native individuals who traveled with Buffalo Bill's Wild West's second European tour that began in Paris in 1889, most of whom were Oglala Lakota. These performers had a variety of reasons for wanting to join the troupe, and a position with the show offered one of the few opportunities for employment in the early reservation economy. As far as their creation is concerned, these photographs represent the material product of a very specific type of encounter between a member of late 19th century French anthropological circles, Prince Roland Bonaparte, and Buffalo Bill's Wild West, encamped in Neuilly for the exposition. Not only in the specific exchange in which these pictures were made, but the larger fair, the indigenous members of the troupe were the object of appropriation on a vast scale by the anthropological milieu. Their display culture and its corresponding interpretation of human difference, and through the making of works such as these, their amassing of material culture. My paper will examine this appropriation and its meaning as embodied by these photographic books, as well as larger corresponding resonances throughout the fair, but also point to its limitations. For the photographs themselves, as well as other aspects of the albums, register ruptures and slippages within this reification of the pictured sitters as, quote, anthropological specimens. Capturing elements of emotion, performance, and these individuals' activities in Paris as modern tourists. These characteristics of the works mandate an enriched critical analysis beyond the discursive framework of late 19th century anthropology and toward the reconstruction of the transcultural experiences of these indigenous performers abroad. The 1889 Paris Exposition Universelle celebrated the centennial of the French Revolution, and the fair was meant to physically embody the progress made since the fall of the Bastille. Spread out beneath the Eiffel Tower, which was built for the occasion, the exhibition constructed narratives of development and modernity through display of the latest technological inventions. These items, phonographs, improved gas lighting, and telegraphs, appeared on the Champ de Mars, here, in the same area as the Eiffel Tower, contained in vast glass and iron structures such as the Galerie des Machines. Further bolstering this narrative of progress was the presence on another smaller fairground on the Esplanade des Invalides of a series of inhabited native villages of the French colonies, and that's here on the map. Here, visitors could stroll past individual pavilions and peer at peoples from the represented place in characteristic dwellings, who went about daily tasks and gave performances. The separation of these displays in a space removed from the representation of technological advancement created a hierarchy within the larger organization of the fair. The comparison in sights, sounds, and materials meant to communicate different levels of development and confirm the government's imperialist agenda. Although stationed away from these central fairgrounds in the northwest suburb of Noyi, the native performers of Buffalo Bill's Wild West were largely interpreted through the same lens as these other ethnographic displays. In addition to this overarching layout, other exhibits at the show abounded that affirmed this hierarchical mode of representing culture. These included Charles Garnier's Histoire de l'habitation humaine installation around the base of the Eiffel Tower, featuring dwellings from different eras and places, and the Exposition des sciences anthropologiques in the Palais des Arts Libéraux. Bonaparte wandered through this vast, constructed dreamscape not as a flâneur, but a researcher, undertaking his, quote, fieldwork with meticulous vigor. The grandnephew of Napoleon I, who had attended the École Militaire de Saint-Cyr beginning in 1879, before starting scientific pursuits in the early 1880s, Bonaparte became a member of the Société d'Anthropologie de Paris and the Société de Géographie de Paris in January and March 1884, respectively. The pursuit of studying human difference in these societies, and especially the former, the Société d'Anthropologie, largely entailed the examining of visiting people at European exhibitions rather than periods of ethnographic immersion. The late 19th century French study of man was heavily rooted in physical anthropology. With the comparison of materials such as bodily measurements and casts, photographs and skulls, thought to be sufficient evidence for establishing racial hierarchies. Working within this context, Bonaparte traversed the exposition, extensively pursuing photographs of the peoples on display. The sheer volume of his series made on the occasion in the Société de Géographie archives attesting to his desire for exhaustiveness. And here's a pair of his frontal and profile pictures of a Javanese dancer, a troupe about which he also authored an article for the journal La Nature. The Buffalo Bill group, then, is just one of many series Bonaparte made in the fabricated landscape of the exposition. Of all the groups on display at the fair, however, Buffalo Bill's Wild West enjoyed a particular popularity. Giving two shows a day before thousands of spectators in their arena for the roughly six-month run of the exhibition. Departing for France on April 28th in the steamship Persian Monarch, the company included, according to the New York Sun, quote, 115 Indians, 48 cowboys, of which 16 are musicians, the rest being riders, half a dozen pretty women who can ride or shoot, as many Mexican vaqueros, and his accompanying menagerie consists of 20 buffaloes, 25 mustangs, 8 Eskimo dogs, and 186 horses. In all, the show comprises about 200 men and women and nearly 250 animals, end quote. With this compendium of Western types and creatures to showcase, William F. Cody, or Buffalo Bill, staged his first invitation-only performance in honor of Third Republic President Sadie Carnot on May 8th at 2:30 p.m., and here is an invitation for the occasion. According to American newspaper accounts, the event was, quote, a great success in every way, end quote, with 15,000 people present, despite the fact that the arena at Noyy only contained seating for 12,000, and the show would continue to attract equivalent acclaim. The Wild West program included such elements as a parade of the troop, various shooting exercises, and races around the arena. Indian attacks on an emigrant convoy and Deadwood coach, and an Indian dance and buffalo hunt. In addition to these scheduled events, one of the most popular elements of the show was the Wild West encampment, through which visitors were encouraged to wander before and after performances, looking into cowboys' tents and Indian teepees, studying visitors up close. A hand-colored map of the grounds in Noyi shows the arena on the right and the camp on the left, with the division of different living quarters for cowboys, ladies, and Indians. the latter of which have by far the largest space, with ambling paths through the lawns populated by their teepees. This installation mimicked that in the ethnographic villages on the Esplanade des Invalides, but on a larger scale, allowing visitors to walk through the site in a more participatory manner. Seeing these teepees, viewers would also most likely have recalled the same structure on display in the Histoire de l'habitation humaine exhibit to represent American Indian culture. From American and French newspaper accounts, this part of Buffalo Bill's Wild West appears to have been of considerable interest. In the San Francisco Chronicle's article on the opening in honor of President Carnot, the reporter indicates that he and Madame Carnot preferred to, quote, visit the camp before taking a seat, end quote. But finding the tents empty, Carnot still, quote, examined them with interest and asked questions respecting the mode of living of the inhabitants, end quote. Bonaparte himself was a frequent visitor of Buffalo Bill's Wild West, along with the larger French anthropological community, who viewed the encampment and other ethnographic exhibitions at the fair as an outdoor laboratory for conducting research. Between August 19th and 27th, the International Congress of Anthropology and Prehistoric Archaeology was held in Paris to coincide with the exposition, during which Dr. Paul Tapinard presented a group of the native performers from the show to the attendees. According to the compte rendu from the occasion, they demonstrated American Indian Sign Language at the request of the Wild West's press agent, John M. Burke. Following the display, quote, Misters Wilson, Ami, and Lagneau each insisted on details of their physiognomy, their paintings, their equipment, and Mr. Kuntz presented a collection of ornaments and their usage, end quote. This presentation, or the Congress in general, was also used as an opportunity by anthropologists to gather data, as Le Petit Parisien, La Presse, Le Parisien, and Le Figaro indicate that on August 22nd and 23rd, quote, several professors from the École d'Anthropologie came under the direction of Dr. Tapinard to complete studies and take anthropometric measurements of the Indians. No one has ever been able to experiment on a troop as large as that of Buffalo Bill's, end quote. Bonaparte, who was trained in the École d'Anthropologie, was most likely an attendee of the Congress and among these visiting, quote, researchers. And this is the context in which, if not the exact time, his photographs were made. The photographs that Bonaparte compiled of individual native sitters, such as this one of Wooden Face, follow a rigid format of alternating frontal and profile views, and like the bodily measurements taken on the Wild West grounds, adhere to contemporary guidelines for assembling anthropological data. Bonaparte both took his own pictures and worked with photographers, acting as producer, and many of the mounts from his 1889 series contain the name Philippon. Regardless of the case here, the methodically sequenced camera images follow Paul Broca, founder of the Société d'Anthropologie's instructions for the compilation of materials in anthropological collections, in his text, Instructions générales pour les recherches anthropologiques. Broca stipulates that the pictured subject's face should always be frontally represented, or alternatively, the head should be exactly in profile, as, quote, the other points of view have no utility, end quote. This practice of anthropometric representation was meant to make the individual's physiognomy legible, scrutinizable, representative of their, quote, race, and comparable with other groups. Not only did this image format indicate the discursive arena in which these works came into being in the late 19th century, but so does the fact that a group of them actually appeared at the 1889 fair in the Exposition des Sciences Anthropologiques, in a section devoted to Bonaparte's collection. Here, visitors could see the compendium of the prince's photographic series, such as those he had previously made of visiting peoples on view at the Jardin d'Acclimatation. These include a group of Omaha Indians in the garden in the fall of 1883, whose pictures appear hanging in the top four rows of this installation. I'm sorry, this isn't a great picture, but the pictures that he had made of the Omaha Indians are the top four here hanging up against the wall. The catalog, however, also mentions many of his photographs executed at the 1889 exposition itself, including, quote, 27 Peaux Rouges Sioux, end quote, referring to the Oglala that formed Buffalo Bill's Wild West. These anthropological appropriations, however, and the spaces of the display and discursive frameworks through which these photographs acquired significance in the late 19th century are not their single fixed meaning. The works reveal other stories of encounter and exchange that disrupt this process of appropriation and allow for the beginning of a reconstruction of some of the histories of the Oglala performers during the period they traveled to Paris. The first native sitter that appears in the Bonaparte album is Rocky Bear, who serves as a particularly good example because he, along with Red Shirt, was the most followed member of the Wild West by the press. His responses and words are at times recorded in journals, and he and Red Shirt became something of celebrities in Paris. Such histories, however, can also be recoverable for less well-known, publicized sitters. Here, for example, this is the profile view of Rocky Bear. Here, for example, is Little Chief, who joined the Wild West before the troop's first European tour and during which his wife, Goodrobe, gave birth to a daughter in the Manchester, England, encampment in February 1888. The event was reported on, and the baby baptized at St. Clement's Church in Manchester, with services translated into Lakota. Little Chief would continue on to the second European tour, where he is pictured here in Paris in frontal and profile view, and then comprised one of the members of a group who in 1890, upon return to the US, defended Cody in accusations by the Commissioner of Indian Affairs about his treatment of Native performers. The ability to match these photographs to individual histories is only possible because a list of names and other details related to the sitters appears at the beginning of each of the three volumes. These lists not only serve as invaluable resources in that most of the pictures of the troupe from this period have no information attached, most of the other pictures not by Bonaparte, but they also function as an indication of the types of transcultural exchanges that occurred in these exhibition spaces. Full of spelling and other errors, they indicate the degree to which information was lost, misunderstood, reinterpreted, or reimagined as two cultural groups came together, often with a translator or mediator in between. These albums are truly intercultural objects, best interpreted as the material embodiment of these encounters. Bonaparte, or whoever was documenting the names, for example, recorded Rocky Bear as Racky Bone. So that's right here. Dog's Ghost is missing an H. It's here. This, which is like nearly unreadable, I think, is Short Man. Father Man, which you see down here, is Feather Man, who was the second sitter I showed. The making of these pictures and corresponding lists occurred in the field of the public exposition space. These encounters happened quickly and orally, and the spelling out of the names was phonetic, with the differences of the parties being cultural and linguistic, among other things like socioeconomic, of course. I have been able to recover correct names by checking these recorded these lists against those recorded in the master performer list at the Buffalo Bill Center of the West based on year and looking at published articles mentioning the names of the troops, names of the troop in 1889. One of the other ways in which this anthropological appropriation and the narratives of a centralized racial identity that surround it is complicated in this album set is the fact that it is not just the native sitters who are presented in frontal and profile views in the tomes. Rocky Bear is the first Oglala pictured, but the entire project commences with Bill Cody himself, who initially appears in a frontal view, cowboy hat tilted on his head, looking straight into the camera. He wears a crisp, buttoned-up suit and leans his elbow on the back of the chair in the makeshift studio, most likely assembled on the encampment grounds as Bonaparte usually worked. Cody, a scout for the Union Army in the Civil War and afterward in the 70s during the Plains Wars, had begun his Wild West show in 1883 and was already mythologized at the point this picture was made, to the extent that he probably needed no introduction, but his identification appears on the prefatory name list in the volume, like the native sitters. In his second photograph in the album, Cody appears with face in profile, now with hat removed, looking over his shoulder to the left, and with elbow still leaning on the back of the chair. Annie Oakley also appears in the series, her set of two images gracing the third volume with all of the other female performers. Identified as Miss Oakley, and with her age recorded a bit low, 23 years, in the frontal view, she sits looking off into the distance, holding her riding whip upright, daintily. Her hair falls over her shoulders beneath her large hat, and the light highlights the sheen of her leather riding gloves, the fringe of her dress, and the extreme cinch of her tiny corseted waist. In the profile view of her, she has not turned her body, but just her head, and looks over her shoulder to the right. Another element of these pictures that problematizes their anthropological goals is the performativity that characterizes the native sitters, some of whom appear against the provisional studio backdrop, posing with props before the camera. The fact that these individuals served as paid performers, acting out Cody's narrative of frontier history before vast Parisian audiences, subverts the idea that such images pin down a fixed inherent identity. These performers enacted roles and played to expectations for both personal and professional reasons. The staged nature of their poses is apparent in the picture of Black Hawk, whose arm sweeps halfway across his body as he freezes with a pistol in his right hand. He presents the show prop for the photographer, and in profile, it hangs over the back of the chair. This performative element characterizes the images of Jimmy Nelson, son of Deadwood coach driver John Nelson and his Oglala wife. As well, Jimmy Nelson sits in the space of the studio with a bow and arrow, the arrow pulled back tautly in his right hand. Nelson, whose role in the Wild West show entailed actually attacking the coach his father drove with a larger band, continues to hold the prop in the profile view. The majority of Native male performers earn $25 a month for their work with the Wild West, with the more coveted members, such as Rocky Bear, making as much as $75 by the mid-1890s, and the Native women averaging about $10 per month, as it appears from the records. During the reservation period, which truly began for the Oglala with the end of resistance to white settlement and the choosing of the site of the Pine Ridge Agency in the late 70s, employment with a Wild West show offered payment for indigenous skills and performances that were actively suppressed by assimilation laws in the U.S. In addition to working as performers in Paris, these show Indians also functioned as tourists in the capital of modernity, Paris. And visible signs of these activities also enter into the photographs. The troupe visited landmarks around the city, as well as the vast but temporary structures and grounds of the exposition. The New York Times reported on a special sightseeing tour arranged by John Burke the week after the Wild West opened, in which a group of the Oglala performers went to the massive glass and iron Galerie des Machines, which showcased the newest technologies. According to the text in the American section, beneath the immense height of the ceiling, the group encountered Edison's phonograph, where they listened to music and speeches, and Red Shirt made a recording in Lakota. Another much reported on visit made by the Indian members of the Wild West was their trip to the top of the Eiffel Tower. As the New York Herald reported on August 10th, quote, "The Sioux Indians from the Wild West encampment yesterday ascended the Eiffel Tower. The pleasure and astonishment to which the red man gave expression were more marked than the stoicism of their race would have led one to expect. Halfway up, Featherman and Dog's Ghost positively showed the white feather, the former saying he would, quote, go crazy did he mount any higher, end quote." Although this description characterizes the Oglala with a certain cultural primitivism, this does not at all come across in the Bonaparte photograph that contains traces of the event. All those included in the ascent had their names listed in Le Figaro with a corresponding article, and one of them is Billy Pino, who you see here, donning souvenirs from his journey and touristic rite of passage. He holds a paper fan that reads Souvenir de la Tour Eiffel, 1889, and displays a silver pendant on his vest that also reads Tour Eiffel. Available only at the top of the tower for those who had made the trip to the highest platform. It's difficult to see, it's right here, but you can see it in the Musée du Quai Branly print. He wears this pendant right below a gleaming silver star that identifies him as a member of the Indian police, creating a coexistence of the markers that indicate his inclusion in the Wild West show, as well as his status as a contemporary urban traveler who has made the most novel of trips to the top of the Eiffel Tower at the 1889 fair. In Pino's profile view, we see the stacking of a beaded eagle on his vest atop the Indian police star, Eiffel Tower pendant, and an American flag. Another one of these pictures that shows signs of the native performer's traversal as tourists through the space of the fair is that of Shortman, who sits in his frontal portrait in a silver beaded vest holding a Japanese fan. A Japanese fan would obviously not have figured in the Wild West show. However, it circulated in the larger abundance of objects from all over the world and blending of exotica that characterized late 19th century world's fairs, and particularly the 1889 Expo. Shortman, who could have acquired the fair at either the Japanese pavilion on the Champ de Mars or the Japanese garden in the Parc du Trocadéro, shows himself to be a seasoned fairgoer, having gone through and explored the various spaces and sections of the exhibition to decide on this particular piece, of a type very à la mode in France, and which he displays prominently. As Buffalo Bill's Wild West's present in Paris indicates, it was through such expositions that visitors encountered other cultures and peoples on a large scale in this period. Through their physical presence and the abundance of tangible goods. Shortman's holding of this object, however, demonstrates that this was not a one-way appropriation, as he too was buying this ephemera and participating in modern ways of being at the fair. To conclude, these photographs were both made and disseminated in the context of late 19th century French anthropology, but this framing discourse may be problematized through reading them for what they show and can be recovered of the pictured subjects' histories. Made following guidelines to render the sitters legible and representative, quote, specimens of their race, the works register slippages and show instead moments of transcultural encounter that capture emotion, performativity, and at times vestiges of their movement through the city as modern tourists. A remarkable material embodiment of these exchanges, this photographic project may be used through both archival work and collaboration with the Oglala community to work to reconstruct more of the pictured individuals' experiences and stories. Thank you.